Hey, this is Jean-Luc from Lotus Wines in New York City. You're listening to Heritage Radio.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money. Making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and I'm here with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Temperamental Newman.
Oh, I could only say the words I want to say.
And we got Big Joe in the booth, engineering and producing out there. Hey, Joe.
Hello.
Joe and I had a special moment today. We bonded a little bit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. We had lunch together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing like breaking bread together.
No, it's nothing.
Okay. Let me just go through the usual.
I think we need to spice up the intro.
Go ahead.
We need to change it up.
You want
to
do it right now?
No, not now. I think we should really talk about
it. I think
this.
You've talked about that and you haven't done a thing about it.
Do it on the fly, Andrew.
You want me to just like redo the...
Go for it.
No, I think now's not the right time. We have a guest here that we really need to get to talk to. But I just think we should talk about that. It's like snazz it up.
Can I just say
we throw some horns and bells
and stream live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. Yeah. If you can't tune in while we're broadcasting live, you can get any episode that's archived on the website free, or you can download a podcast through iTunes, and that's free too. So there's no reason not to listen to Flash Talks Cash all the time, anytime. While we're streaming live, we'd
Steve,
like to hear from
just
you.
Shoots me down every time, Steve. Shoots me down.
I'd like to hear from all of you, any of you. So call us during the show. The number is 718-497-2128, or you can email Joe in the booth, info@heritageradionetwork.com.
.org. Isn't it .org now?
No.
We need to change it up? Joe?
.com.
It is either.
Either.
Both work, it's so both. You're both right.
There we go.
Oh. Okay.
How often does that happen?
Never. Never. Joe, that was a good one, because we're never right about the same things.
All right.
I'm so just always
can
right.
Can I now introduce my...
I've been talking to Steve for the last 2 minutes.
My friend, my guest today is the one and only Steve Nutt from Staten Island, New York. Hi, Steve.
It's quite a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
I've envisioned this, and it's not quite what I envisioned.
Did you think it was more glamorous?
It's more corporate than you thought.
It's really very down home and
it's not glamorous?
And comfortable. No.
I was expecting
a swivel chair.
You got a chair with a hole in the seat.
I wanted a Barca lounger. I've been talking about Barca loungers for years now.
Well, then bring your own furniture.
Hell no.
Oh, okay.
What am I donating?
There's a giant boar's head in there. I mean, what else can you ask for?
Can I donate? Can I donate a chair?
Oh, my goodness. I'm
of
just
course you can. I donated
the
light. I donated this lamp.
It's a charitable write-off?
It's a charitable write-off.
Click the donate button on the homepage.
There we go.
Yeah, donate goods, services, or money. How's that? Okay, so our show today is, when is it time to hire your first employee?
Never.
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 No. Well, Andrew and
the
Steve.
The pressure's on.
It just never works.
The reason why
all it does is create more work for you, Steve.
The reason why I decided to do this topic was
different
was
kind of
Steve.
Work.
Yeah. Steve is on the cusp of doing that. Steve, let's just tell our audience what you do and a little bit about you so they know where you're coming from.
Well, I'm an artist, and that's, you know, the beginning of trouble right there.
Well, for a financial person, that's a challenge.
And I've been renting a storefront in Staten Island.
Yes.
And trying to figure out what to do with it for about a year.
Yes. So you rented the storefront first before you had a business idea.
Well, there was a long story that precedes, it was an easy segue into, you know, I was already there, so to speak, and just taking over all the rent was a desirable thing to do in a way, but maybe
a big
not
step.
A big step. That was a big enough step.
Yes.
And a year later, I'm now getting a very clear idea what I want to do.
Well, tell the people what you want to do.
I want to create an educational facility that's sort of community-based and targeted on the community rather than the college students I've been teaching or the folks at the Jewish Community Center who come to me to learn various different kinds of art. I want to reach out to the people in my Stapleton neighborhood and basically fill in the areas in education, or one of the areas in education that's really being shortchanged now, and that is arts education. Because I feel very strongly that what you learn when you go through the process of understanding art and understanding how art is made, you really learn a problem solving that you don't get with mathematics.
You get a different skill set.
English composition.
Yes. It's a different way of looking at
science.
Some of the arts that you do teach in your studio or your space, can you tell the people what kind of things they can learn there, they can take up?
Well, I work primarily with clay, but I think of clay as a medium within which you can learn to paint, to draw, as well as to sculpt and to make functional things.
With
you can
learn
printing and lots of
So you're
attended.
Not limited at all. You're open to all sorts of mediums and ideas.
Well, I keep a certain amount of materials on hand that would allow you to work outside of clay, but clay is my primary thing.
Okay. So the question I have is, so you're a studio that's mostly educational based.
Yes.
Are you looking to expand the studio size, or are you trying to get a retail space, retail portion into the store, or what? Are you street level?
I'm street level. The retail part of my business is basically dead.
Okay.
There was a time when I was totally engaged in retail and wholesale work, design and production and fulfillment of orders and promotion and catalogs and, you know, the whole.
So that has flattened out? Is that due to lack of time and effort by you, or, you know, is that not the way you want to go with your business?
Well, I dug very far down into a certain area, and then that area was co-opted by basically manufactured goods from the Far East.
Okay.
I got kind of priced out of my own market.
Okay.
I was making things by hand,
right,
and the factory things coming in from India and China kind of just, you know, brought the prices way down, and I couldn't compete anymore.
Right.
Okay, so you moved away from that by choice then, and into the educational side.
Yeah. Well, I've always been involved in the educational side. The first production job I built for myself went parallel with an education job that happened for me, college teaching job.
Yeah. So, and that worked for quite a few years for you.
Well, it's worked for 32 years.
Right. So you're a seasoned teacher.
So what's the next step then? Like, what is it that you're on the precipice of hiring an employee? You're saying, where are you trying to go? Are you trying to get another teacher in the location? Or are you trying to get another, you know, a studio help to assist in the process that would make you more effective?
Well, it's a complex question. What to do? I'm just beginning to get to the point where the neighborhood people are losing their shyness about coming into my store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm just beginning to learn what they want, what they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I've been experimenting by putting promotional teases in the storefront window.
Mm-hmm.
We teach chess. We're forming a sewing class, you know, branching outside of you know what I ordinarily do, just to try to get people to come in,
right, and engage, and interact, them. Right, mm-hmm. right. Okay, so it seems that Steve is now, first of all, he's not a business person, so this decision, he doesn't sit down with a pencil and paper and determine that it's time now financially to bring somebody in because the next person is going to make a lot of money for me. Okay. That's not the way you approach this.
No, that's not it.
That's not it at all.
So he's expanding his idea, not based on financial. I think you're just trying to grow your business in other ways that you feel like you can, you know, benefit the community.
Well, yes.
It will grow his business.
Of course, but that's not he's not looking at it as a fiscal thing. He's looking at it as more of like a grassroots growing his business and trying to encompass the neighborhood into what he's doing and, you know,
and
branching out on his own in
and
other ways.
That'll be successful.
It will, on the back end, create success. But for him, he's just trying to create this community cooperative kind of thing where everyone is welcome and can come in. Is that correct?
As an example, this week I had two different neighborhood people who are sort of in the same stage of life that I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 64. They are a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both sculptors. Mm-hmm. And they both walked in to be curious. And within 2 days, I had artwork from one of them in the window because that seemed to be the right response, to create a connection to him, and in a way to sort of promote to the neighborhood the fact that there are people like us here, and the neighborhood may not know that.
Well, that's interesting. It's an interesting business approach.
So are you trying to expand the studio?
I'm limited in the physical space, and I'm trying to expand into my landlord's garage for one more piece of the sort of infrastructural problem that I need to solve, and that is to have a kiln nearby.
Okay. Right, for your clay.
I don't have
okay.
Right now.
But now you're at the point where you talk to me and you say to me, I may be ready to hire somebody to help me. And my first question was, what is this person going to do to help you? What is it that you're looking for this person to do? To spin the wheel and to make more pottery? What is it you want them to do?
I want to create more sort of educational buzz inside the store that draws people into it. I want to expand the hours that I can physically be there. Right. I still have a day job.
Yes.
A part-time job.
Okay.
So I can't be there all the time, and I'm 64, so I run out of gas at 6 or 7 o'clock.
Okay. So he wants to grow the different programs he's going to offer and make sure the store is operating if he can only be there 4 days.
Longer hours.
So the store will be open 7 days a week, so people can always come in and find out the information about the location.
And will this person not only babysit the store, so to speak, keep the store open, but will this person have any other function in the community, in the art?
Yeah, he wants someone who can create their own program, sort of, and be a second arm to him.
In the sense that, you know, okay, who's going to be interested in working with a 64-year-old guy? Okay, maybe if I had a 24-year-old guy or gal in the store, then maybe I'd be able to attract a younger crowd.
Right. So you want some
a new generation,
a little youthful exuberance is what you're trying to do.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
well, that's an interesting one. So now Steve is at that point. And Andrew, to be frank, you are at the cusp of...
Constantly.
Considering hiring because you don't have...
Constantly.
...enough time to...
But it's a catch-22, Steve. As I've noticed in my past experiences, I guess if you train them properly, they may be able to do the work.
Yeah.
But even when you train them properly, they just don't do it as well as you do. So then sometimes you wind up doing their work as well as your own work, which creates double the work, and it becomes much more stressful.
Well, let me just say something. As a seasoned employer who ran a business for 20 years with employees, training is key. Patience is another thing. And you also have to learn. One of the most important things I learned, and I learned this through trial and error, is not all your employees are going to do the job the way you do your job. And they have different strengths and different weaknesses. And if somebody is good at something, maybe even better than you are at something, or not as good at something, you work with that person on their strengths. You don't try to get a zebra to become an elephant, because you're going to get yourself frustrated and you're going to get the employee frustrated.
But why wouldn't you want the person to be well-rounded?
Well,
like if they're really good at A and not so good at B, why don't you try to help them with B so they're equal footing on
A and B? Well, it depends. Depends on what's involved. It may be something that is trainable and bring that person up. It may be something that's just innately not going to happen. If I have a person who is not good at answering the phone, they can say, hello, this is Joanne's office, but they're not good at engaging people and being friendly and making people feel warm, I'm not going to sit there and make that person my customer service person and take in all the new sales calls and troubleshoot. It's silly. I'll get somebody else who's better at that function.
I just feel like it's hard at the place I'm at. I'm sure it's probably similar for you, Steve. It's just they don't have the attention, the detail, the focus on your business as much as you do on your own business, and they don't. The effort's not going to be nearly as much as.
Well, doesn't it depend on the relationship that you create? I mean, if I were going to bring somebody in, I certainly want to know who they are and what their training is and what their experience is, but I don't know what their relationship with me is going to develop
like. Correct.
And I would say communication is pretty important.
100% important. Before I want to read this that I found in the New York Times. This was mind-boggling to me, and this speaks to the point that you just brought up. This is amazing to me. Excuse me while I read this, but there is, this is somebody writing into the New York Times about mediocrity in the workplace. And she writes, there is nothing wrong with being an average mediocre employee. Not everyone aspires to be in management. If the person meets the requirements of their current job and they like the job and want to stay in the job, so be it. Stop trying to force people to go to the next level. The reality is that work is not the most important thing in everyone's life. People have more important things in their life than work. Work is simply a means to get the money we need to pay the mortgage and other bills. Work is a low priority even for most people. I'm only willing to do the bare minimum that it takes to get a paycheck every 2 weeks. As long as I'm meeting the requirements of my job, that is good enough. Don't expect any more of me because I will not be a slave to any company. That is an attitude of many employees in this country. Maybe it's a big problem. As far as I could see, that's a major problem in this country. But I think that speaks to how some people feel about.
Okay, but it doesn't quite match up with sort of how I envision things happening for
me. In your place, right.
I envisioning hiring somebody who's highly motivated to get on board with my ideas.
But I was speaking to him how he says he gets frustrated because people don't do the job the way he wants to do the job and he does the job. Let's take a break for a minute, come back, and continue talking about this.
What you saying? Mind over matters for matters. You gotta try and climb over, gather the data. Take the time, find out, and act how you rather. Do what you have to, you get what you after. Mind over matters for matters. You gotta try and climb over, gather the data. Take the time, find out, and act how you rather. Do what you have to get what you're after.
I never letting nothing keep on holding me back. From beginning a skill when I develop my rap. Back in those days, I paid dues, now I'm royalty. Loyally, your underground self-made employee MC certainly contended. Bend the standards back to the great. Like Homeworld Records, legend step to the plate. A mixture of McGuire and so-so, I most stay so-so and never blow up.
This program is sponsored by Tri-State Merchant Services. If you are a business owner, then you are processing credit or debit cards and checks. Providers for these services can be large, faceless companies who take your business for granted. But at Tri-State Merchant Services, your satisfaction is our priority, and we strive to earn your business every day. We offer more than just credit card processing. We provide valuable insight, solutions, and practical tools for streamlining your business. What's more, while we have the manpower of the leading processors, we never lose sight of the fact that every business starts small and that together we can do big things. At Tri-State Merchant Services, we believe in working with local businesses to strengthen our community. A strong community builds a strong economy. Check out our partner referral program and all of our services at tmsmerchant.com.
Okay, Flash Talks Cash, we're back. I think that Joe's got an email he wants to read to us regarding today's topic.
I sure do. So it's in response to today's topic, which is when is it time to hire an employee? And we have Steve writing in saying, are there any state or federal benefits out there for small businesses to take on staff? I heard about some last year, but we weren't hiring then. We're now are considering whether to go with a contractor or a full-time staff member. So.
Okay. Well, I will talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the rest of how to hire. But there are programs. I did mention them early part of the year. If you take people off of the unemployment roll, off the welfare rolls, you do get a credit. Young kids, 18 to 24, 16 to 24, there was a credit for that, too. In the past couple of years when there was the financial crisis, there were more wage credits out there. And don't know of any of them still lingering around. They may be there. Don't know. I just know that the ones hiring the youth and, of course, hiring prisoners, that's a big one.
If that's you hire, the youth works. That's what
it's
called,
right? The youth works. Yeah. And then there's the prisoners. The economy is on the rebound, and small companies are beginning to hire. So the government takes those programs back. But they're off. Besides federal, you can look within the state that you're hiring, because Steve works all around the country, so he should look at the state that he's looking to hire in and see if they have state programs.
Okay. Well, I just also think, like, if you're going to go contractor compared to full-time employee, you really can look at what kind of revenue streams you're looking at for the long term, not just short term, being like, oh, we need someone now because we're in over our heads. If you don't have the capital to pay that person all year, you should maybe want to just outsource for a job by job basis. But if you think something's consistently going to keep growing and you need someone to take on a certain role, then you should definitely look full time. And there are, you should check the New York State websites and
around the country.
Yeah. That wasn't in the email.
Okay, I'm just
You should
just
check
speaking.
Your state and local websites and, you know,
see what's the out states there,
even
from.
The IRS.
But let me just say something to that. Hiring a freelancer or a contractor versus a full-time employee, it's not an option. It's not a choice. It's how you're going to structure that person's employment. If they have a lot of independence and they could do the work.
I'm saying if it's a job-by-job basis, if it's a contract that's one particular job, you can outsource instead of hiring someone full-time.
Okay, but I want people to realize it's not a choice. Oh, should I put them in a 1099 or should I put them on the payroll?
Well, no. If they're working for you consistently, then they and you're giving
it's
them...
It's about the control issue.
I understand. Okay. If you're giving them a schedule and a set task that they have to perform in your time frame...
Yes.
Even that could be an outside contractor.
Well, it's very hard, and the IRS is breaking down on that big time.
It's very difficult. I
understand.
Because
people got carried away, and they abused the 1099 situation. Let's now go on to when you decide now that you're ready to hire.
What's involved?
What are the
steps? So the first thing you have to do as an employer, is you have to get an employer identification number if you don't have one yet. If you don't have one yet. So a lot of sole proprietors operate under this social security number, but if you're hiring...
In Steve's instance, I'm sure he has an EIN number because he has a store. He probably has insurances already in place as well as some sort of...
I don't think he does. And it's very common for somebody to go out as a sole proprietor and not get a federal ID number.
To open a business? So usually... Yeah.
No, you don't have to. It's
for insurance purposes, I would like to separate
so
myself.
So you need to get a federal ID number. That's the first thing. And then you need to get workers' comp insurance and disability insurance for your employees from the day they start, from the first day. It's not a choice. It's not an option. It's mandatory. You have to get a W-4 form filled out, which tells the employee fills that out when they get hired to tell them how much you want to withhold from your paycheck, whether you're single or married, you have one dependent, five dependents, 14 dependents, whatever. There's also an immigration form, an I-9, which you have to supposed to get from the employee to confirm that they are legal to work in this country. You know?
Usually if you get a copy of a passport or something.
Or a Social Security card.
Social Security card, I would feel more comfortable with a photo ID passport because the Social Security card is easy.
Yeah.
So I would easy to replicate. Right. Have anyone seen a Social Security card? It's pretty
easy.
It's pretty straightforward and not a very difficult document to forge.
I don't know. And then you have to register with your state. The state. Let's assume you're registering with New York State because you have to get an employer registration number, which gives you your which gives you your unemployment insurance rates, and they have to know that you're going to be sending in taxes to them. And then you have to withhold the taxes, whether it be weekly, monthly, quarterly, depending on the size of the payroll. And on a quarterly basis, you have to file payroll tax returns to the government. Once you get into the system and you start filing payroll, you must stay in the system even if you have zero payroll down the road. I highly recommend that the average person not do this themselves. It's pretty complicated, and if you make a mistake, they penalize you heavily. There are lots of payroll services out there to take that on for you, or you can get a good bookkeeper or an accountant. Yes,
have them walk you through the steps. Contact an insurance broker to get you in touch with a workers' comp disability. Right. And then, you know, let them guide you as to the next steps after that. Let the accountant handle all the registrations with the state and other local agencies.
It's something that most people can't do themselves.
No, it's something let the professionals
do. And let me just tell you, a general rule of thumb is if you're hiring somebody, the cost to the employer is approximately 10% higher than their salary. So if you're hiring somebody for $50,000 a year, it's going to cost you another $5,000 on top of that for the insurances and the payroll taxes and the filing fees and all that stuff. That's a general rule of thumb. It's not, you know, you can't go to that exactly, but that's so it'll cost you $55,000 to pay somebody $50,000 a year. So that's the beginning of the process.
Steve, look for an intern. They're free.
Well, that's what some interns are free. Some interns
are
free.
Well, it's your choices whether or not you want to do an paid
internship. So that's one of the things. What are the options? How do you find these employees? The first thing you could do is go. A simple way is find an intern. And
in the creative fields, it's a lot easier to get someone to work for free, I think.
I think you're right. And right off the bat, my college employer has a program where they place interns in in the arts field. So
and they can get credit for it as well, or
They can as long as I can sort of be a supervisor that they approve of, I suppose.
Frankly, I have hired interns through the years. I use college students in the accounting field, and my opinion is, you get what you pay for. If you pay the intern, I think you get a better. I also think it's more. It's more. What's the word I'm trying to
ethical,
think?
Ethical, moral.
Yes, I all of those things honestly, to pay like, somebody.
I think it's. I think it's illegal to have an intern if they're not either getting paid
or getting college credit.
College credit. I think it's illegal in New York.
I don't know.
Either way, but I think the kid should get something.
I don't think somebody should come to work, you know, every day or however how many hours a week and not pay them. I think it's degrading to the person after a while. That's my opinion. You pay them what the industry average pays.
Industry
standards. Yeah, you go to an you get an accounting student to work in an accounting office. They look and say, "Oh, the average kid gets paid $12 an hour."
I think you meant like an accountant would get paid like a starting accountant or something like that.
No, the industry standard, whatever function, whatever job you're hiring.
Minimum wage, whatever.
Well, it doesn't have to be minimum. For me, I didn't feel it was, these kids were working hard. They were third and fourth year college students, and I wasn't going to pay them. Why would they come all the way into Manhattan and pay
all
that?
That's different. Okay. You picked interns from a different place. That's where you advertise.
I'm just saying, but they could go to McDonald's and get better hours, okay?
So, but
and not have to get dressed.
The beauty of an internship is to learn, network, and meet people in industry that you want to get into. Mm-hmm. That's the reason for an internship. And a lot of people say, like, I deserve this, I deserve that. I read an article in the Times recently, people complaining that they weren't getting paid for an internship. You sign up for an internship because you want to get the network and the skills to get you to the next level so you can put that on your resume.
Until you've had five or six of them.
That's your own choice. You sign up for these things. You should, if you know you're not getting paid for an internship, don't complain after the fact. I understand that you should get paid for your time. I respect that.
Yes.
But if you sign up for something like this, don't anticipate it and expect it.
Okay.
If it's not up front and saying this is what you're going
to
get.
I think if you agree to it, then of course it's your fault. But I think the thing that's problematic is when there are businesses that abuse the intern.
Yes, of course.
You know, well, not like abuse it in the fact that they, you know, there's plenty of businesses that will never intend on hiring you.
Yes.
There's no way that, you know, I guess the networking is worth something, but especially in like, you know, media jobs and in the arts, people are always, you know, wanting interns. You look on Craigslist, there's no job listings in media or anything.
Joe,
like
I'm totally with you. I just think if that's where you want to go and this is your first possible step, don't expect too much. And then you can always walk away from that situation if you feel like you're being abused.
Right.
Definitely get out of it.
True.
If you're working like 12 hours a day and you're not getting paid
for it, doing really menial tasks.
Yeah, like they were getting laundry for people or going out and getting coffee all day. Right. Just get out of there. Just go get
it's
the coffee
gonna,
and don't
it's
even
not
come back.
Improve. Right.
You know, like you're not getting anywhere in that situation.
So besides interns, we talked about hiring freelancers or independent contractors versus hiring an employee. You can hire a part-timer rather than sign on for a full-time salary. Part-timers still require all those things that we talked about, insurances and payroll taxes and all that stuff.
It's the same situation.
Or you can barter some of it. You can barter some of your services if it works for you. If you have, you know, a dentist that needs accounting services or, you know, whatever it is, you can do that. Just on the side, barter services are taxable, but I'm not going to... That's another whole show.
That's another show.
That's another whole show. So... What?
All right, let's wrap this up and see what we think Steve should do here. What do you think? What do you want? What is after sitting here? What have you thought and figured out?
Well, the realities that Joanne outlined are kind of daunting, and I can relate to, you know, those folks who say, "Well, government throws up a lot of regulations that kind of hold me back, hold us back."
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm just one person, and
you can only do so much.
I can only do so much, and I guess if I can, the words income streams keep that you mentioned before are ringing in my ears, and I'm thinking, well, okay, if I can create maybe some more income streams for myself through my work, maybe that will. Bring me to the point where I feel like I can afford that 10%
on top of the salary.
Well, you know, you spoke...
And hire somebody.
And you spoke earlier about how the Chinese underpriced you, and this is part of the reason why the Chinese underpriced can sell their stuff so cheap. They don't have these rules and regulations necessarily that we have. So
what I was going to say is also Steve can then look to having these people provide their revenue streams that, you know, that they can pay themselves... Like by setting up their own programs, you can increase yours by maybe renting out the studio space for higher amounts of money, or you know, increase
or pay on a commission basis.
And there's a lot of things that he can do, like where they can supplement their own pay as well as you supplementing their pay with other uses of your space, creating the kiln and things like that. There are steps that you can add it up to the total instead of just coming out of your pocket or looking for them to provide all the income for their own revenue.
That sounds like a more skilled, more experienced person than perhaps I've been thinking about.
Well, you were talking about increasing the scope of what you're doing in this space. So if they can set up a sewing class, you know, maybe you can get $10 a person and they're getting paid $15 an hour. They get four people. They can cover their salary for a day or two. And then you can increase your revenue by renting out the kiln or something like that. And, you know, another day's worth of work is covered by that. And you're still making the same amount of money.
I'm just beginning to find out what's excites the market enough to want to come in and to actually want to learn something that they would actually pay.
I would highly recommend an intern.
Okay. Yes.
Offer up the space and let people utilize it for what they think they can do. And if they want to increase their, you know, usage of your space, to be like, all right, well, I need to take a rent of some sort so that they can utilize it for their class and what they want to do, stuff like that.
Or as I said earlier, maybe just a commission base. They bring in some revenue through their sales or coming up with a class like Andrew just came, an idea for a class. Oh, listen, I probably could recruit 10 people to take whatever kind of class.
A painting class.
A painting class. And you say, okay, you bring in 10 people and we can make $1,000. I'll give you 20%. I'll give you $200. That would motivate the guy to go and find 10 students to do this. So there's options besides just a straight guy paying him, you know, $8, $12 an hour sitting in the studio. Options? What are you talking about, a gay guy? All right, we're going to wrap this up. I hope we addressed some of your questions, Steve.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys next week, okay?
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs
on iTunes
by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.